First to a national budget with a difference, handed down last month on May the 30th by the New Zealand Ardern government. The wellbeing budget, as it's now termed, moved away from traditional priorities like economic growth and productivity and focused instead on goals like reducing inequality, improving mental health, transitioning to a low-emission sustainable future. There it is again. Ministers were told that if they wanted a slice of the budget pie, they needed to come up with proposals which improved the lives of citizens, not just wealthy citizens, and that it met a suite of well-being measures. The budget made headlines around the world and raised quite a few eyebrows, but it's not as radical as some are making out. Indicators for well-being have been used previously in the UK, Europe, even the United Arab Emirates, and often by conservative governments. So how will it work, and how will its success be measured? Well, Professor Arthur Grimes joins me now. He's an economist, a former chair of New Zealand's Reserve Bank, and now chair of Wellbeing and Public Policy at Victoria University in Wellington. Arthur Grimes, hello and welcome.
Good morning, Geraldine.
New Zealand rates high on the UN World Happiness Report. It comes in around 7th or 8th after the Nordic countries. And indeed, they're sort of said to be among the most contented people on the planet. Why do you need a well-being budget?
Well, we're not top, so we can always strive to be at the top. But there's also significant parts of the population that don't share in such strong well-being outcomes as others. So I think it's as much a distributional issue as a sort of levels average type issue.
Yes, I have to say that I did pull out, because I wasn't quite sure how you'd answer that, some of the statistics have also, amidst all that contentment, some very intractable problems. Suicide rates are climbing. It's one of the worst countries for family and sexual violence in the OECD. 27% of children there live in poverty and go without necessities.
That's right. It's quite a, like many societies, we have our major problems. They're also, unfortunately, linked with ethnicity. So Māori and Pacifica populations tend to do worse on almost every measure than, say, European and Asian populations. So that's a cleft in the country that we have to improve. Women have, worse outcomes when it comes to obviously family violence and things like that. So there's some definite issues we need to address.
So talk us through, if you would please, how the wellbeing approach works in relation to the budget. The government sets five priorities, I read, that have to be met. What were they? How were they arrived at?
The Treasury had done a lot of work previously on what's called a living standards framework, which is very closely linked to the OECD's work on their Better Life Index. And then as a result of that, they came up with 60 indicators. That's too many to actually run a policy on. So the Minister of Finance in New Zealand sets out a budget policy statement 6 months before the budget. And in this case, he announced five main priorities that would be driving the budget. And one of those was lifting mental health outcomes. One was supporting Māori and Pacifica outcomes. A third one was child poverty and family violence around that as well. A fourth one was climate change issues, and a fifth one was sort of digital upskilling for the new economy. And essentially what he's told the government agencies was that if you want to come with a budget bid for new expenditures, it really has to be within one of those five areas, or don't bother coming and knocking on my door.
So how would that differ? I'm still a bit puzzled by this from what they, because they're goals that I suppose any decent government's got. How will it change things?
Well, in the past, our governments have, spent a lot on health and education and law and order, et cetera, like that. So it's not a huge change. I think it's a mischaracterization to think that previous governments were not looking at well-being. Our previous government, for instance, a national government, increased benefit levels for poorer people.
Well, that was the famous Bill English. I mean, I remember doing stories about the fact that he was doing this whole of government. It was regarded as quite trailblazing.
Exactly. So I think the last government had a well-being focus as well. They just didn't use that word. But what was a little bit different this time was the process, I think. And that's really where I see this budget as being different from the others, is not what it was trying to achieve, because I think all governments have tried to achieve wellbeing outcomes since at least the 1890s when we introduced old age pensions. But this one was more focused. And when I talked to people in the officials in the bureaucracy, they were really adamant that they had to shoehorn their bids into these five areas or else they weren't going to be considered. So I think there was a greater focus, but it's the focus that's more important, I think, than there's the big change,
so
not the wellbeing.
Right, and the civil service, the public service clearly took this on as well.
Yeah, they had to, otherwise they wouldn't have had their bids.
And as I read it, Arthur, it was driving a shift away from business as usual. This was the message being sort of hammered home, and to also try to drive things away from a centralised focus, which New Zealand is very much known for, towards other related, sort of emphases. Is that right?
Well, the business as usual one didn't actually change, and the Minister of Finance made it clear that the wellbeing approach is really just being applied to new budget expenditures, not to the business as usual expenditures, and that may be happening in future, but it didn't happen this time. So most of the budget, of course, goes on just, the things we've always spent money on and the automatic increases for teachers or nurses or whatever else like that, and that's where most of the expenditure goes. That didn't change. So it was really just focused on the new materials, and that's where the greater focus happened.
Well, let's look at this mental health, for instance, which was at the core of this budget, which received this huge boost in spending. Why not just make it a priority, for instance, and allocate spending accordingly? How did tying it to wellbeing indicators change the way it was funded?
Well, it was made a priority. I think there's a really good question as to whether the Treasury's underlying living standards framework actually led to any change in policy. I don't believe it did. I think the government would have had this as a priority anyway. But it's about well-being. And if you look at the work on people's subjective well-being, the work of Richard Layard and others in the UK, mental health is the most important indicator of people's overall well-being. So if you're looking at a well-being approach, you would be prioritising mental well-being, mental health, and that's what the government has done. As I say, I think they would have done that whether or not the Treasury had done their background work on that.
How do you think success will be measured then? How can it be measured? Like, I suppose I'm talking about in 5 years' time. If this continues, how can it be better measured?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. One of the priorities was on child poverty. And there the government has set some really explicit targets about reductions in child poverty. For instance, on one measure of material hardship, 13% of children growing up in material hardship now, and they want that reduced to 10% in 3 years and 6% in 10 years. And so we can say, yes, there's some definite targets there. We've got measures. We can do that. Now, one of my criticisms of this budget is that there haven't been similar targets for any of the other areas. So, for instance, suicide rates, as you mentioned, are high in New Zealand, one of the highest in the world. And there are no targets here at all for what we expect to deliver in terms of reduced suicide rates. Now, I think the previous government actually had a system of better public services targets, which had 10 targets in place across a wide range of areas, crime, education, and this sort of thing. And unfortunately, we now have just dropped down to targets on child poverty and nothing else. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yes. Before the budget was handed down, you said that you felt it could have reduced inequality in other ways by introducing, say, a tax on capital gains, for instance, which is a far more, we've just had that discussion here, it's a far more predictable level of discussion, you see. This is what's so interesting about the language in this. Do you still maintain that a big lever pull like that, while it mightn't sound as sexy, is actually more effective?
Well, I think the child poverty stuff will be effective. They're looking at changes and benefits there, as the last government did, and I think they can be effective. One of the capital gains tax would have been a sensible thing to do. Unfortunately, they shied away from that. And actually, one of the other unfortunate things is in the previous budget last year, they wasted a huge amount of money on giving money to people who are already rich. So essentially they introduced free fees for the first year for students studying your tertiary education. They gave a cash grant to the elderly and, you know, the people who are best off in the country overall. So they actually wasted a lot of money giving money to richer people, which should have been used to alleviate, you know, the issues for Māori and Pacifica and et cetera, which they're targeting now.
Look, I wonder where, in a way, this budget tries to reset the public government debate. I mean, this has become incredibly important everywhere, I think. But we really had visited this in Australia during our recent election, that the tone of the discussion between different parts of Australia varies so much. Expectations of government, people's sense of whether they have any buy-in, you know, to their own region and the business of sort of being seen to be savvy enough to take part, etc., etc. I wonder whether, in a way, this is what this is aimed at changing the language and rebuilding public trust?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think why this budget has received a lot of attention around the world is that we've seen a trend around the world in recent times towards, you know, nationalism, parochialism, selfishness, you name it, whether it's in Europe or the US or perhaps in Australia. And I think the rhetoric here and the intention has been much more of saying, no, let's reset this back to a social democratic tradition. And I think it's that sort of tradition that's really appealed to people more than necessarily the specifics of the policy.
Very interesting to see how it is generally received. Look, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Okay, thank you, Geraldine.